Welcome to the Herd Health Podcast, a convenient place where you can stay up to date on the dairy and beef cattle industry in Canada. With information shared from our technical services veterinarian team, we aim to bring producers, ranchers, and veterinarians relevant insights on trends, management practices, and science that can be applied in the field. This podcast is brought to you by the cattle team at Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health Canada, a leader in the animal health industry. You can find episodes of our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Thank you for listening.
Hello, Herd Health Podcast listeners, and welcome to our next episode. My name is Heather Hargrave, and I'm a brand manager with the cattle team at Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health Canada. Before we jump into today's episode, a reminder that if you like this podcast, please subscribe and or follow us on your favorite platform. We would also appreciate a review. Now let's get into today's discussion. With me today is Dr. Tim Nickel, who is a member of our Cattle Technical Services Veterinarian Team. Today, we are going to be chatting about vaccines and vaccination. These are a valuable tool that farmers and ranchers use as a strategy for preventative health management in their herds, including disease prevention, which is an important pillar of antimicrobial stewardship. Welcome, Tim, and thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Heather. How are you doing today?
I'm good, thank you. And yourself?
Doing well.
Great. And you're ready to chat all things vaccine and vaccinations?
For sure. One of my favorite topics.
Excellent. All right. So let's jump in then. So when we talk about vaccines, Tim, we often hear the two words vaccination and immunization used in the same conversation. Could you maybe elaborate a bit more on what both of those terms mean and what they are and maybe what the difference is between the two of them?
For sure, Heather. It's something where, you know, I think a lot of times we wind up using those two terms thinking that they mean the same thing. And while they're kind of both apply to vaccines, it is something where there is actually a specific difference between the two words. Vaccination is the physical act of giving the vaccine. So whether we're injecting that, whether we're giving that in the nose, versus immunization, which is actual the response of the animal's immune system to the vaccine. So one is the thing that we're doing to the animal. The other, immunization, is the response of that animal to the vaccine. The reason why that's kind of critical to make that definition, that difference, is because vaccination doesn't necessarily result in immunization. It requires an animal's immune system being able to respond to that vaccine. And as well, it also takes time for that immune response to take place. So it isn't something where the minute we give the vaccine that we have that immunity in place right after. So an important reason to kind of clearly define the two.
So you can have vaccination on its own, but you can't have immunization without actually doing the vaccination.
Well, you can have an immune response to natural infection, of course. Okay. But one of the things that we want to do with vaccination is to try and prevent the animal from actually getting sick, right? And so vaccines are a way to do that without having the animal first experience the disease. So you can get an immunization or an immune response due to natural infection, but that's the whole goal of vaccinating, is to try and prevent that natural infection.
Okay. And then is there anything that impacts this success rate of an animal being immunized after it's been vaccinated?
And that's a really good question. I mean, that's really the crux of the whole thing. And, you know, I do a lot of vaccine presentations for producer meetings, for clinics. And one of the presentations I do, we call Beer and Fences. And I use the analogy of a barbed wire fence. One of the things with a barbed wire fence, you know, you can have the best barbed wire in the world. If your posts are rotten, if they're not solidly placed in the ground, doesn't matter how good that barbed wire is, it's not going to keep animals inside the field, okay? And that's the same thing that can be said for vaccines and the immunological response to them. You can have the best vaccine in the world, but if that animal is not able to respond well to that vaccine, it's not going to be able to keep out the pathogens that we're trying to protect against, okay? And some of the factors that can play a role with that, you know, we look at stress as being a common term that's kind of bandied about. But what does that look like, or what can that look like? That can be environmental stressors. So, you know, a stormy day, that can be stressful for the animal. That may blunt their ability to respond to that vaccine, because that stress response is immunosuppressive. Another thing that we can see that can affect that, you know, animals that are sick, it's going to be harder for them to again, respond to vaccine, partly because their immune system now is trying to deal with something else, and it's not able to allocate resources to what we're trying to do, which is to have them respond to the vaccine. Other stressors, such as things we do when we're processing animals. So for example, weaning is a big stressful time for, especially if we're doing other things like castration, or maybe we're doing disbudding or dehorning, branding. These are things that, again, add stress to that animal and can blunt their ability to respond to the vaccine. Last but definitely not least, one of the other big factors that can affect their ability to respond to vaccines is nutritional stress. This could be as simple as, you know, maybe they're not getting enough feed, so protein and energy. The immune response is very dependent on energy and protein, because they're building antibodies that require those building blocks. And if we have any deficiencies there, that's going to affect that immune response again. But there's also vitamins and trace minerals that are very important for proper immune function. So vitamins like vitamin A, vitamin E, trace minerals like selenium, copper, these are very important for proper immune function. And if we have deficiencies in those, that also can wind up affecting the ability of that animal's immune system to respond to vaccination.
So it sounds like from all of this that you've just described is, in order to set your animals up to be successful and have a positive or a desired response to that whole vaccination activity that we do, it sounds like there also needs to be a planning component of when you actually plan to do these vaccinations. Would that be fair to say?
Oh, definitely. And you know, when we talk about vaccine protocols, the biggest decision is knowing what to vaccinate for. But also critical about that is actually knowing when animals are at risk or at highest risk for these diseases, because timing is critical. Another analogy is like insurance. Insurance needs to be in place before an event happens. And the same thing with vaccination. You need to have that immune response in place before a disease or at least exposure to those pathogens takes place. So knowing when those times are, that can help us plan when we vaccinate. And again, coming back to how I talked about, you know, it takes time for that immune response to occur after vaccination. I usually kind of use a general rule of thumb of 10 days to 2 weeks. You know, we probably need that amount of time for that immune response to take place. So that's an important part of timing, is it really everything when it comes to vaccinating. The better we can kind of plan that, the better our response and our level of protection is going to be.
So you alluded to this in your answer, that there's different types of diseases that farmers and ranchers could vaccinate for. There's also different types of vaccines available. So maybe we'll jump into that piece then as the next part of our conversation. So before we get into the diseases that you can vaccinate for, can you maybe talk a little bit about the different types of vaccines that are available? I know there's different routes of administration. There's also literally different types of vaccines that act in different ways. So if you could maybe elaborate a bit more on those two types of things, and maybe start with the route of administration piece.
For sure. It's something where there's a lot of different ways to kind of break down the different types of vaccines, but those would probably be the two most common things to look at is route. And then we'll talk later about the type of vaccine, killed versus modified live. But as far as the route of administration, generally in cattle, we have two routes. We have either injectable, so whether that's going under the skin or in the muscle, or the other common route of administration is intranasal. So these are for respiratory disease vaccines that we can administer in the nose. They each have their pros and their cons. For the intranasal vaccines, really, if you think about the most common route of entry of these respiratory pathogens, it's through the upper airways. So providing a local immune response through these intranasal vaccines, it hopefully kind of blocks that progression of that pathogen down into the lower parts of the airways. Okay. So it provides you a nice local response, which can be beneficial. Generally, we think of them maybe building that immune response a little more quickly than the injectable vaccines. The downside is they don't provide as much of a systemic response. So they do tend to stay fairly local. The other thing is they're a little bit shorter lived. They don't provide a long duration of immunity, not when we compare that with the injectable vaccines. The injectable vaccines, pros and cons for them, PROS would be that you get more of a systemic response. And for some diseases, that's preferable. When we're not talking about respiratory infections, if we're talking about diseases that affect, say, the fetus for a bred female, having a systemic where we block pathogens from getting to that fetus, that systemic response is more important. The other thing that we see with injectable vaccines is that you get a more broad effect and one that generally lasts longer than the intranasal vaccines do. The other thing that we look at with that is that there are diseases that we vaccinate for that we just don't have intranasal vaccines. Like I said, generally, when we're talking about intranasal vaccines, it's really for the respiratory infections. For things like blackleg, so clostridial diseases in general, blackleg, tetanus, red water, we only have injectable vaccines for those and for other diseases as well. Like I said, we only have injectable products.
And are there any limitations in terms on, I'm thinking of young calf vaccination specifically, with injectable vaccines, is there any limitation on how soon you can administer that? Because I know from my experience, and for the listeners that don't know, I grew up on a beef farm. I know those young calves, if we talked, you know, earlier off of the recording about colostrum, if they maybe don't get the best start, sometimes they're more susceptible to disease. So is there limitations on how soon you can use those injectable versus an intranasal?
And that's one of the other key differences there. The intranasal is a vaccine that we can generally use in a very young calf. So even, you know, under a week of age. One of the things that we see as a result of, you were talking about that colostrum intake, is we see antibodies that are absorbed in that animal. And those antibodies can interfere with the response to vaccine, because those antibodies can bind to the components that are in the vaccine itself. So we call that interference. With the intranasal vaccines, we see much less interference. And so we can vaccinate very young calves. The injectable vaccines, it is something where generally, and it depends on the type of vaccine, which we'll get into in the next section here, but the injectable vaccines, probably I wouldn't use those under a month of age. But depending on the vaccine that we're talking about, we can vaccinate even as young a calf as that and still have some protection elicited.
And then if we think of the other end of the lifespan, just as a practicality question, because I'm curious, could you also use intranasals in a mature animal?
There are times where it can make sense. For example, in a feedlot setting, you've got an outbreak of respiratory disease and it is challenging to get that under control. That's where sometimes we'll go in with an intranasal vaccine at that point in time, because they may stimulate a better or a quicker immune response than the injectable vaccines. We may go in to try and stem that tide. The only thing I would say there is, again, it comes back to the fact that we're vaccinating animals that are already sick. And so what we're doing is we're trying to stem the tide. So a different expectation. We're not necessarily going to prevent the disease, but hopefully what we do is we slow down the progression and limit the outbreak.
That's great to know. So it sounds like when a farmer or rancher is trying to decide intranasal versus an injectable, it's not straightforward or simple, but it would be great, you know, if they have questions, as they do with everything, to chat with their herd veterinarian to get those answers, to figure out what's best for their herd and their situation.
Yeah, you've heard me talk before. One of my favorite lines is to talk to your veterinarian. It is something where, while I always kind of can give the 20,000 foot view, it is something where it's always valuable to talk with your own veterinarian, because they are going to be much more familiar with your particular situation. It is something where I get a lot of questions about, can I give a protocol, a cookie cutter recipe for vaccination protocols? I can give a general guideline, but really, it requires a lot of customization for every operation. And that's where your own herd veterinarian becomes a key player in that development of that plan.
So we've alluded to this a little bit. In addition to the route of administration for vaccines, there's also different types in the killed or the modified live. So do you want to share with the listeners what the difference is between those two types of vaccines as well?
Sure. So the other way that we can kind of classify vaccines is to, as far as types, is we can look at whether they're killed or whether they're modified live. And really, the names really indicate what the definition is. I mean, a modified live vaccine is one that contains live organisms. A killed vaccine or an inactivated vaccine is one that contains killed components. Okay. Or in some instances, we may have toxoids or inactivated toxins that are present in there. An easy way to tell the difference, and you know, I always tell people one way is you read the label. There's always a lot of information on a label. I will tell you as I get older that printing on the label gets harder and harder to read. Quick and easy way to tell whether you have a modified live vaccine or a killed vaccine is look at the packaging or the product itself. If you have two vials, one with a liquid and one with a powder, that's typically going to be a modified live. Modified live vaccines, we can't keep the organisms alive if we keep them in solution. We need to keep them in a freeze-dried state, which is what that powder product is in that other vial. Once we mix that with the liquid, we resuspend them, we reactivate them. But as soon as we do that, those organisms are starting to die. So it is something where, and especially when we talk about handling and use of vaccines, and we'll probably talk about that a little later too, but I'll make that point now as well, is as soon as we mix that, we need to use that. Not, my recommendation is try not to mix up any more of that vaccine than you're going to use within an hour.
So then going a little bit deeper then about modified live, what are some other facts or interesting bits of information that people should know about these vaccines specifically?
Yeah, so there's, again, much like intranasal and injectable, there's pros and cons to each. I mean, there's a reason why we have those two different types. Generally, the modified live, and especially when we talk about modified live and killed, there's the five-way vaccines, so those that contain IBR, BVD, PI3, BRSV. Those are the main ones that we have kind of modified live and inactivated or killed versions of. And so it is something where they each kind of have their niche or their place where they have some strengths. So for example, modified live vaccines, they mimic more kind of like a natural infection because these organisms are live. And so we generally get a stronger immune response as a result of that. And that means that oftentimes we can just do a single administration, so one dose, rather than having to do two boosters initially that we might have to do with a killed vaccine. It also usually provides a higher level of immune response as well as a longer duration than we typically see with the killed vaccines, which sounds like we should always use a modified live, right? And generally, I would say that, yes, there's a much higher reason why we should use that in these cases. However, one downside of that, one of the viruses in these vaccines, IBR, infectious bovine rhinotracheitis, one of the things this virus can do, and even the vaccine virus, it can cause abortion in pregnant animals. If we're not vaccinating pregnant animals, then there's obviously no risk in vaccinating them with modified live. Or depending on the vaccine we're talking about, we may be able to set animals up in order to use that modified live when they're pregnant. But it does require planning, which again, that's always a key thing about use of any vaccine, but means we need to set them up properly. But there's also situations where a producer might buy an animal that's pregnant already, or they have not vaccinated previously and they're starting when animals are pregnant. Then we need to use a vaccine that's safe to use in those animals where we don't have a previous vaccination or we don't know what the previous vaccination history is. And that's where the killed vaccines come into play. Killed vaccines, they're safe to use regardless whether they're pregnant or not. That IBR virus that's in the killed vaccine is dead, so it cannot cause that abortion. But the negative of the killed vaccines is that they don't provide as strong of an immune response and as high a level of protection against some of the diseases we're vaccinating for. The other thing is usually you wind up having to do, especially when you're initially starting a herd off or an animal off on a vaccine protocol, they usually need two doses, you know, 3 to 4 weeks apart. So they're a little bit more, require a little bit more planning in that respect and more labor, more costs because we're having to do two doses.
So then just one thing to go back with the modified lives, question that kind of popped into my head. We were talking a few minutes ago about colostrum. Is there an advantage, and you know, young calf health, is there an advantage of using a modified live or a killed vaccine again with that younger calf, or is there a benefit to using one or the other?
Yeah, and that's a good question. I mean, I was talking about the bred female, but when we talk about the calf, those colostral antibodies that I talked about, that interference or that maternal interference, the modified live vaccines generally are going to have a better chance of overcoming that maternal interference than a killed vaccine will. So especially when we're talking about vaccinating a young calf, a month of age, as you know, as we were talking about, a modified live vaccine is the one that you're going to have the best chance of it providing an immune response. Killed vaccines, again, those maternal antibodies are going to bind to those vaccine components, and it really is going to eliminate that immune response as a result. Whereas those modified live organisms, depending on the vaccine, there's other components in there that can help overcome those maternal antibodies.
Okay, so we've set the stage then. We now understand there's different routes that you can administer vaccines, and then there's killed and modified live vaccines.
Yes.
Great. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks, Heather.
We invite you to join us for our next episode for part two of this conversation, where Tim shares insights on what diseases farmers and ranchers should be vaccinating for, when to vaccinate, and why the timing of vaccination matters. If you liked this episode, please consider sharing a review. And don't forget to subscribe or follow the show too. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to the Herd Health Podcast. The information shared in this podcast does not replace the advice of a veterinarian. We encourage you to reach out to your veterinarian for more information about the topics discussed. Boehringer Ingelheim cannot recommend the use of products outside of the Canadian product approved labeling. Find more episodes of this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Thanks again for listening.